reading this morning is from 1 Peter 3, verses 1 through 7. It says, "Wives, in the same way submit yourselves to your own husbands, so that if any of them do not believe the word, they may be won over without words by the behavior of their wives. When they see the purity and reverence of your lives, your beauty should not come from outward adornments such as elaborate hairstyles and the wearing of gold jewelry or fine clothes. Rather, it should be that of your inner self, the unfading beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is of great worth in God's sight. For this is the way the holy women of the past who put their hope in God used to adorn themselves. They submitted themselves to their own husbands, like Sarah, who obeyed Abraham and called him her Lord. You are her daughters if you do what is right and do not give way to fear. Husbands, in the same way, be considerate as you live with your wives and treat them with respect as the weaker partner and as heirs with you of the gracious gift of life, so that nothing will hinder your prayers." This is the word of the Lord.
So I trust you enjoyed the choir. Thanks to Winnie, who has worked so hard. To bring together talent and then idiots thank you, you did really well. Thank you so much. That was just great. And I hope you're tapping your feet and swinging along. It reminded me of being in a church in the southern states, you know, and we'll get there eventually with you. Who knows? But that's okay. That's all okay. I do want to emphasize that July the 1st outreach. I would encourage you to invite your family and friends and any colleagues from work and neighbors that you might have to come along on that July the 1st. We celebrate 151 years as a nation. But we also want to celebrate that Jesus is Lord and do that by having a good time together and enjoying one another's company. So do come along on July the 1st. On July the 9th, Catherine and I celebrate 30 years of marriage. Thank you. You want to thank her, really, I think, but anyway. There is so much about her that I want to be thankful to God for. She is incredibly hardworking. She shows grace and wisdom that dwarfs any that I might have. She is quick to care for others, even when she is tired or exhausted. She rarely complains, but gets on with the responsibilities and demands of the day. And she's a superb cook. Most of all, she lets Jesus inform her attitudes and outlook. I have learned so much about Jesus from her. I would not be the person that I am today if it were not for Catherine. I cannot thank the Lord enough for this amazing woman. And at this point, if you wish to reach for the Kleenex, you have my permission. It's okay. But today we come to a passage about marriage. It's a passage that many today think controversial. Peter's words appear sexist or chauvinist. Peter says that wives must be submissive to their husbands. He says, using the illustration of Sarah, that they obey their husbands. He even calls wives the weaker partner. Why does Peter say this? What does it mean for us today? And will I get out of this sanctuary alive? Let's remind ourselves of the context, please. Peter gives wisdom and advice to Christians living as strangers in the world. We have a new allegiance, and it's to Jesus Christ. Our calling is to live in such a way that others are drawn to Jesus. And that always brings challenges. Look back in chapter 2 and verses 13 to 17. Peter reminds us that we submit to human authorities, but we always put God first. Or chapter 2, verses 18 to 21, reminds us that we may live in an unjust social context. In Peter's day, it was slavery. But we overcome injustice by how our suffering displays Christ. And then we come to today's passage, chapter 3, verses 1 through 7, reminding us that in marriage, we live for Jesus. Now, I know many this morning are married. I know many are not. If you are not married or not yet married or no longer married, Peter is not giving you a week off. Though this passage may not directly address you, it still asks all of us to consider how we live for Jesus in our closest relationships, whatever they might be. How is the Lordship of Jesus being worked out in your relationships? There is a lot that still applies here. But Peter focuses particularly upon marriage. So what kind of marriages honor God? Marriage is a relationship of mutual respect. My father is a retired world-class cellist. My mom, a professional violin teacher. My father is virtually blind and can no longer play his cello. I call them regularly. And recently, both of them have been listening to recordings of my father playing the cello. And when I call, my mom says, "We've just listened to your dad playing, and it's wonderful. It's wonderful." Or my father will say that my mom's violin playing is so beautiful. There's a deep, deep respect. Marriage is a relationship of respect. And what does this mean according to Peter? Peter says that wives are to be submissive and husbands are to be considerate. Now let's look at that word submission. It is not the first time that Peter has used this word in his letter. He's used it in chapter 2, verse 13, and in chapter 2, verse 18, about submitting to governing authorities and submitting to those who are responsible for us. I remind us of that because the Christian life is a life of submission. It's the way of Christ. Remember in the Garden of Gethsemane, Jesus prayed, "Not my will, but yours, O Lord." That's submission. And Peter emphasizes that connection in how he opens this passage we're looking at today. He writes, "In the same way, wives, be submissive to your husbands." But in the same way as what? In the same way that Jesus went to the cross for you and me, as Peter has just said in the immediately preceding verses. So what does that mean for wives? Submission is the way Christ conforms a wife to his likeness. Now, it does not mean that a wife dumps her brain or her will in a wedding ceremony. Submission is not subjugation. Submission is a discipleship choice. It's an act of dying to self. It is not coerced. It is not commanded in that sense. A wife who submits rejoices when her husband takes the leadership role, because she knows that when he does, she finds true freedom in the same way that we all find freedom when Jesus becomes Lord of our lives. But what of husbands? Can husbands demand submission from their wives? Absolutely not. Peter begins his instruction to husbands with exactly the same phrase. Do you notice that? In the same way. Husbands are also duty-bound to follow the way of Christ. Now, in the ancient world, husbands had absolute authority over their wives and families. Peter's words, therefore, are revolutionary. Christian husbands must give up this absolute authority. Christian husbands must give up this absolute authority. They are to act with understanding. That's what the word considerate in the New International Version actually means. But understanding what? Understanding who their wife is. Peter says that wives are the weaker partner. Now, this could mean physically weaker. It's true that women are not usually as physically strong as men. When we built our retaining wall at our home in Penticton, I didn't expect Catherine to carry the heavy stone block. Actually, she did all the planning and the construction. I just carried the block. But there's another meaning. Weaker partner could mean legally weaker. In ancient times, a wife had no rights. Peter is saying that Christian husbands are not to take advantage of a wife's legally weak position. What does that mean for Christian husbands today? In pre-marriage counseling, I remind the married couple before they come married that marriage is a covenant. It's a promise of self-denying love. I look out for Catherine's interests before my own. She looks out for mine before her own. That's how a healthy marriage works. On their wedding day, a couple will make promises to love, comfort, honor, and keep one another in sickness and in health, remaining faithful as long as both shall live. Those are serious words. A practical way that husbands can show respect to their wives is how they speak about them in public. The same goes for wives too. Preparing this sermon, I came across numerous jokes about marriage, about husbands, and about wives. And I confess an aversion to all of them. When we're married to a Christian spouse or not a Christian spouse, it is never appropriate to joke about marriage or put down your spouse in public. Marriage is too precious for this. But our wider world seems to enjoy doing that. And maybe if you're in the workplace, you hear the joking that goes on about marriage, or you see it on TV, or you hear it in other contexts. Catherine is the most precious human being on the face of this earth for me. I will not, and I have no reason to speak negatively about her. She is, as 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 7 says, heir with me of the gracious gift of God. In God's eyes, she is equal. We are equal. Why would I devalue in public, or even in private, what God considers so precious? Instead, I am called to serve her. And she submits to me by letting me serve her. As one Old Testament scholar put it, there is a biblical doctrine of headship. It is that a husband has the unquestionable right and responsibility to let himself be crucified for his wife, and that wives must submit to their husbands in the sense of letting them do that. Shall I say that again? It is that a husband has the unquestionable right and responsibility to let himself be crucified for his wife, and wives must submit to their husbands in the sense of letting them do that. Marriage is a relationship of respect. Marriage is also a relationship of maturity. Some years ago, I heard a preacher say something that continues to challenge me. He said, "What if marriage is not about making us happy, but making us holy? If my motive for marriage is to satisfy my need for happiness, then Catherine becomes merely a means to an end, not a person I cherish. But if marriage is about becoming holy, then my longing is for Catherine to be the person God desires her to be. My focus is on her. And that's Christian maturity. For Peter, maturity is about the quality, therefore, of our inner life, not external appearance. Our society seems fascinated this day and age with the perfect body, stunning looks, and gorgeous appearance. But true attraction is not found in these things. Proverbs 31, verse 30 says, "Charm is deceptive and beauty is fleeting," much like hair. "But a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised." Of course, Peter is not saying, therefore, throw out all your cosmetics. But neither is he saying that godliness is striving to look like the models on the catwalks of Paris, New York, or London. If wives, and we also might include young women or men who are looking to be attractive, if you believe that outward looks are going to succeed, please think again. Gucci, L'Oreal, Ralph Lauren, Calvin Klein, and Chanel might draw the eye, but they will not draw the heart. I've told Skylin, my daughter, that when she eventually dates someone, and that won't be for some time yet, I have one initial requirement. It is that the young man needs to take me out for coffee and a chat first. First. We'll see what kind of person he is then. The kind of person worth attracting is someone who loves you for who you are, not merely for how you look. It was Agatha Christie, the famous murder mystery writer, who was also a Christian, by the way, who, having married an archaeologist, said, "An archaeologist is the best husband a woman can find. The older she gets, the more interested he is in her." For the Christian wife, as 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 4 says, such beauty means cultivating what does not fade, a gentle and quiet spirit. These are not passive attributes. Gentleness and quietness are signs of strength, inner strength that is not controlled by what's going on around, but by responding to God. Both gentleness and quietness are of great worth in God's sight, according to chapter 3, verse 4. And even this past week, as some of you know, Catherine and I are wrestling to buy an apartment here in Vancouver or raising two kids with some significant challenges in their lives. I am in awe of how Catherine looks to God. Constantly, she says, "We will trust the Lord. We will trust the Lord." It's about inner maturity. As 1 Samuel 16, verse 7 says, a person looks on the outward appearance, but God looks on the heart. But what of husbands? Peter says something that should cause all husbands to sit up and take notice. He links our attitude toward our wives with the effectiveness of our prayers. Just look at the end of 1 Peter 3, verse 8, where he says, so that nothing will hinder your prayers. So let me ask you, husbands, how is your spiritual maturity? Too often we men ride on the tails of our wives' spiritual maturity. And sometimes in my less gracious moments, I want to say to myself and to my fellow men, get a spiritual backbone. Get a backbone as men and live for Jesus. There you are. Our wives and our families do not deserve husbands who are shallow spiritually. They deserve Christian men who have spiritual depth. In pre-marriage counseling, I use the illustration of a triangle with God at the top and the husband and the wife at the bottom. And as each gets closer to God, they become closer to one another. Each of us looking to God, we become closer to one another. Spiritually mature husbands are therefore passionate for Jesus. They understand that marriage is not about making us happy, but making us holy. Marriage is a relationship, therefore, of maturity. Finally, marriage is a relationship that points to Jesus. And this really is the main point of this passage. It's a situation that many wives and some husbands find themselves in. A wife comes to faith in Jesus, but her husband remains an unbeliever. Throughout my pastoral ministry, I have seen the struggle that many women face when they want to live for Jesus but receive little to no support from their husbands. I remember a situation in England some 30 years ago. The wife became a Christian. Her husband despised her new faith. And one day, he said to her, "It's either me or Jesus." How does a wife respond to that? In this case, she had the courage to say, "Then it's Jesus." Thankfully, the husband realized that his wife was not going to compromise her faith, and the marriage continues. But it's not always like that. In Jewish and Roman culture, when a woman married, she automatically adopted the faith of her husband. His faith became her faith. But what happened when she became a Christian? Peter does not say that she should return to her husband's faith. That's impossible. I mean, Jesus is Lord of her life. Instead, Peter tells her to live in such a way that her husband is won over. And in the only place, in Scripture where witnessing without words is commended, Peter tells her to let her purity and reverence, as if it were, preach to her husband. She becomes a covert spiritual operative in the relationship. She remains faithful to her husband, devoted to God. And like the wife who had the courage to say, "Then it's Jesus," the wife is showing her husband that he has nothing to fear from her faith. She'll continue to love, affirm, and encourage him. At the same time, she demonstrates that loving God brings new depth into her love for her husband. And in a very, very real way, she now takes the lead in the relationship because she is the one who's directing her husband to Jesus. She points her husband to Jesus. Before we conclude, let me add two important points, since this is the first time I've preached on marriage here at Trinity. This passage, and others like it in Ephesians 5 and Colossians 3, do not require a wife in an abusive relationship to continue suffering. When marriages break down, it is desperately sad. But there is no way a pastor or a church should counsel a woman to remain in a marriage when she is abused. Violence in the home is not to be endured. Please speak to a pastor or our church counselor or someone that you respect if you are facing something like this. Please. But I also want to speak to those of us who are not married or not yet married. God has created marriage to be very precious. He also created sex to be very precious. But when the two are separated, and sex is pursued beyond or before marriage, that preciousness is destroyed. Sex is like duct tape. Used in the right way, it will bond two things together. Used in the wrong context or repeatedly, it loses its stickiness. It will no longer bond. In the right context, in a covenant of marital love, sex draws a man and a woman together. In the wrong context, sex weakens that bond, making it difficult to bond later. Now, God's grace is bigger, of course. But I want us to hear this. It's not popular today, but who said Christianity was popular? It is the truth. And I want us to hear it and cherish that day, if we are married or if we are already married, when we can cherish one another, including in the physical relationship. Nearly 30 years ago, I married Catherine. I love her with all my heart. If you are married, I encourage you today to tell your spouse how much you love them. Whether your spouse is here with you this morning, somewhere else, overseas, wherever, make some way today to tell them you love them. Use a phone call, flowers, arrange a date just to go out. If you are widowed, I pray you may know God's gracious blessing as you remember your spouse and celebrate who that person has been in your life. We honor you and we give thanks for your faithful example as someone who still grieves the loss of a dear loved one. If you are unmarried, not yet married, I encourage you to consider very carefully what marriage means. We're called to holiness, to live self-denying love. And remember the triangle. The closer we become to God, the closer we become to one another. And may God bless you. And may you know his grace to sustain us in each and every relationship that we have. Amen.